This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Skydive, drive across the country, learn to tango, become quadrilingual. Part fantasy escape, part self-motivation. Items on life lists include adventures, fun, and what might be described as new life resolutions, like lose weight or get out of debt. As you can tell, the morning to-do list has taken a turn toward the path of enlightenment. Before climbing every mountain and fording every stream, composers of life lists write down all those things they hope to accomplish before they die, and then check them off, one by one. The lists are getting more popular as people seek meaningful ways to spend their time, energy, and money. Later in this hour, how much should campus security weigh on a list of factors to consider about college? But first, if you have a life list and find yourself checking off items, give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. Is blogging on your life list? npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with New York Times reporter Alex Williams, who wrote 10 things to do before this article is finished in Sunday's Style section. He joins us from our bureau in New York, and it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thanks for having me.
So why are more and more people apparently creating life lists, do you think?
Well, that's a good question, but I think no matter who we are, we all feel like there's something a little more out there, and life lists are sort of a tangible way to actually pursue them, to feel like you're getting more out of life.
To actually organize it as you would organize your day.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's simple and effective and it just feels right.
Mm-hmm. Does the life list concept, is that from birding?
That's certainly one of the places that it took off, but I don't think too many people know about that, actually, since birding's kind of a niche market. I think a lot of the popularity stems from some of the books like Patricia Schultz's travel book, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. I think that book and some others have inspired literally dozens of imitators, and I think that's probably kicked the fad or trend into high gear lately.
Mm-hmm. But this idea of having it on a list and checking it off, that satisfaction of the check mark, that seems to be an important part of this.
Yeah, there really is something to it. I mean, I think it's one of the attractions is the fact that it allows you to dream like in a way you haven't really since childhood, but at the same time feel like you're being an industrious adult, checking things off and mm-hmm. moving towards a conclusion.
I wonder if at least part of it isn't the fact that a lot of us discover we look at our to-do lists, you know, bread, milk, dry cleaning, and our lives have become a lot more prosaic than perhaps we would have dreamed when we were younger than we are now. And this is a way, as you suggest, to encapsulate those dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think no matter who you are or what you're doing, you feel like more and more of your time is going to work and to just getting chores. And I don't think people feel like they have the free time. So this is one way to sort of enforce free time upon yourself. It makes it feel it's one way to almost make fun seem like a responsibility.
and by making it that way, then we'll get it done by heavens.
Absolutely.
And I wonder, you also...
It's like homework, basically.
Like homework. There are some generational aspects to this as well, you discovered.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I talked to baby boomers who say this is a baby boomer thing, and I talked to Generation Xers who say that it's a Generation X thing. But I think both those generations are products of the consciousness revolution of the 60s and the 70s, kind of the, you know, I'm okay, you're okay sort of generation where people came to expect more out of life than just material security, but they actually wanted happiness. And I mean, I think for baby boomers especially, their parents grew up thinking that, you know, the key to success and happiness was just moving from a Chevy to an Oldsmobile to a Cadillac. Whereas baby boomers all said, you know, they read Carlos Castaneda. They were going to set out on their own course. And I think this, you know, a lot of them actually got off that course. A lot of them ended up going into high-pressure jobs, having the kids, having all their parents stressed. So this is one way of sort of getting back to where they were when they were younger.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get some listeners involved in this conversation. Do you have a life list? What's on it and why? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Our guest is Alex Williams of the New York Times. And Mick joins us on the line. Mick calling us from Palmyra in Michigan.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to your speaker there, and I agree with him 100%. You know, I'm the same way. I have, you know, grew up, got the kids, the wife, the full-time job, all that, and then I realized, hey, it's time to get on with some things. So I put some things on my list, and I recently went out and climbed Mount Rainier this spring. I've got a couple more mountains on the list next year, and in fact, I bought a kayak to go kayak across Lake Michigan. That's my next one.
And you have this list on a piece of paper. Where do you keep it?
Well, I had it in my palm, but the palm died, so I actually have a piece of paper in my desk drawer.
And you go back and you actually check them off.
Absolutely. It's the only way I can get them done, I think.
And where did you get this idea from?
Well, I don't know if I saw it anywhere in a book or something. I just saw some neat things being done, and I wasn't doing them, so I figured it was time to jump in and get some things done before I leave this planet.
Right. Well, thanks very much, and good luck kayaking across Lake Michigan. Are you picking a narrow part, at least, to kayak across?
Yeah, I'm going to try to go from Escanaba down to St. Ignace across the southern shore of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Joining
us now is Justin Zakim. He's a filmmaker and screenwriter, executive producer of an upcoming film about life lists called The Bucket List, and he's with us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. And welcome to Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And you wrote a film about people who cross items off their to-do list.
I did. Well, I actually I went to film school and graduated, and fulfilling all the goals of my generation, proceeded to do nothing for many years. And at a certain point, I moved out to California and was waiting tables and sort of got fed up with myself. And one day sat down and wrote a title of Justin's List of Things to Do Before He Kicks the Bucket. Wrote a list of things, one of which was get a film made at a major Hollywood studio. And about a year or so later, the idea struck me that it would make an interesting idea for a movie. So I wrote the story of two men, which in the film are played by Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman, who mm-hmm. are roommates in a cancer ward. They get news that they only have a few months left to live. And so together they write a bucket list, a list of things to do before you kick the bucket. And they break out of the hospital, and very soon they're riding a Harley down the Great Wall of China, racing stock cars, jumping out of airplanes, all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. And so was one of the items on your bucket list to hire named talent for my movie?
Oh, no. That came out of heaven somewhere. No, it was actually a very unpopular screenplay in Hollywood. I think I got turned down by everybody twice, and somehow I got it into Rob Reiner's hands, and he sparked to it immediately, and through him we were able to get Jack and Morgan involved.
Which is how you went from being a bartender to you're now an executive producer?
I was executive producer on the film, yes, and then I'm now writing and producing some other projects.
Uh-huh. Now, as I understand it, there's also a book that you've written called The Bucket List, Things to Do Before You Kick It.
We're working on it now, and essentially what happened when I went out with a screenplay was the response from people was really interesting. They said, we absolutely do not want to make this movie. But hey, I read your script and I then sat down and wrote my own bucket list, and wouldn't you like to see it? So, I had the idea that, if that was inspirational, then what about going out and meeting extraordinary people from across the world? And in the last few months, it's been its own dream come true for me. I've sat down with everyone from Daniel Tammet, arguably the smartest man on the planet, to Hugh Hefner, to Morgan Freeman, compiling lists and by putting them next to each other, getting a real look at what people who have seized control of their lives and accomplished great things, what are their dreams? What are the things that drives them?
Oh, what was it that Hugh Hefner thinks is still on his list left to do?
Nothing. Hugh was very, very frank with me that he honestly could not come up with a single thing left that he hadn't accomplished with his life. And quite frankly, I couldn't argue with him.
Alex Williams, do you find yourself in that situation? Have you made up a life list and said, wait a minute, I think I've done everything?
Well, do you mean in Justin's or in Hughes?
I was wondering in Hughes. Yeah.
I've still got a few things left to do. Yeah, this is something when I was coming out of college, I read a Sports Illustrated story about Lou Holtz, the football coach, and he said among the 100 things he wanted to do, he wanted to win a national championship, he wanted to tell jokes on The Tonight Show, and I thought it was a cool idea, and here I am several years later, still haven't done it, but I think this article might be the prod I need.
Uh-huh. Let's see if we can get some more listeners in on the conversation, and we'll turn now to Barbara. Barbara's with us from Ann Arbor in Michigan.
Hi.
Hi, Barbara.
I have kept a list for probably about 8 or 9 years, which I've categorized into things like charitable goals, professional goals, things I want to do with my kids. And I actually found that the financial part of it really liberated me unexpectedly, because once I'd met my financial goals as a compulsive saver, it freed me up to travel and do things that I think I otherwise wouldn't have given myself permission to do.
Oh, so by establishing a goal, once you hit it, you said, okay, now I'm free to do these other things, as opposed to without writing that number down, you would have felt, I don't have enough.
Exactly.
And so what is...
In addition to the other satisfaction of of doing the other things that are on the list.
And what are some of those other things on the list?
Oh, joining various types of boards, different things I want to do with my kids. I've got it very, very detailed. Reflecting my very compulsive personality.
How many items are on your life list, Barbara?
Well, there are probably only a total of about 20, but I have it by decade. So.
Well, Barbara, it looks like we know where you're going to be for the next few.
But actually, it can be very satisfying and liberating at the same time.
I bet it is. Thanks very much for the call. Good luck with your life list.
Bye-bye.
And I wonder, Justin Zakim, as you went through, a lot of the people you talked to have achieved their financial goals in life, you would think. What were some of the more interesting answers that you learned?
Well, the things I found most interesting were the mundane things that you or I would put on our lists. Morgan Freeman desperately wants to cultivate the perfect golf swing. Good grief. Most of them deal with children and family, making sure their loved ones who they leave behind at the end of their days are well taken care of and set up. The interesting ones to me, actually, were one of the questions I've been asking people is, can you go back in time to a moment when if you had turned left instead of right, your life would not be sitting where you are now. You'd be doing something completely different. And a lot of people actually harken back to that one time where it was often a very arbitrary decision where they just decided on a whim, I'm just going to do this. And lo and behold, many years later with much drive behind it, here they are.
Yeah, the Robert Frost moment, if you will.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're going to have to keep working on our life lists for a minute or two. Number one should be give us a call. Let us know what's on your things to do before I die list, 800-989-8255. Email is fine, too. The address is talk@npr.org. And we'll continue to find out why these lists are so popular and if anybody follows through when we get back. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. But right now, back to life lists. You've made grocery lists, to-do lists, possibly career goal lists at some point, but what about lists of things to do before you die? Learn French, visit the pyramids, just finish the Odyssey. If you have a life list, what's on it and why? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Justin Zakim is still with us. He's a filmmaker and screenwriter, executive producer of the upcoming film about life lists called The Bucket List. Also with us is Alex Williams, a reporter for The New York Times, who started this by writing an article on people that write and follow their life lists in Sunday's editions of The New York Times. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And let's go to Ed. Ed's with us from Denver in Colorado.
Hi. I actually have two. One is just to learn French, and that's just because I really enjoy listening to people who speak French. But the other is, many years ago, I read an article in Sports Illustrated about a person in Maine, I believe, who was had the most consecutive ski days ever recorded. And he just checked it off on a calendar. He took at least one run a day as long as the lift was open. And I thought to myself, that's what I want to do. So when I retire, that's what I'm going to do. And I was telling people about it, on and off throughout, the past 20 years. And one day I was at a party, and I'm telling somebody about it. And my wife, who had always heard me say this, she finally turns to me and she says, "You're serious about this, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, I am dead serious about this." So about 2 years ago, we bought a house in the mountains. We live in Denver, and we bought a house in the mountains. And although I haven't had any year yet of consecutive days, I'm getting many, many more days in, and I'm just really, really enjoying it.
Uh-huh. He reminds me, Alex Williams, of the person you cited in your story who, in making her life list, put the first thing down was to live in a beach house and said, "I never realized I wanted to live in a beach house so much."
Yeah, that was an interesting interesting story to me, too. I mean, I think sometimes you do sort of plumb the depths with these things. I mean, we get so caught up in our day-to-day concerns about paying bills and that sort of stuff that we really don't pause to think of what we want deep down inside. And not only did she get the beach house, she wrote a novel about her life list, and now that's been optioned to Hollywood. So we might have another bucket list-ish movie coming up soon.
Yeah, Justin Zakim, it looks like you may be spawning an entire industry here. Thanks very much, Ed, and good luck, and we hope you achieve your goal of skiing every day.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed this. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. Justin Zakim, other than making big Hollywood movies, any other things left to do on your life list? I think Justin's actually left us. Justin Zakim was with us from NPR West, our production facility in Culver City, California. We thank him for his time today. Anyway, look forward to The Bucket List, which is scheduled for release in December. Here's an email we got from Aaron in Phoenix, Arizona. First, I love the structure of the author's column as a life list for a news article. It made me laugh out loud. However, I was struck by how the life list focused on actions and not so much on aspirations, e.g. skydive versus be adventurous. Is it the activity or what the activity brings? What do you think, Alex?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of people actually have very generalized items on their list. Be a better human being, be more confident, and that sort of thing. I mean, I think if that works, that's fine. I mean, it seems to me, though, that the people spark their own imagination most by saying climb Everest as opposed to you know, just be adventurous. But, you know, I think really whatever works for you works.
All right. Let's get a caller in. Charlotte. Charlotte with us from San Antonio in Texas.
Hi, Neil.
Hi, Charlotte.
I was just listening to the radio station, as I do every day, and I was reminded of my mom. My mother passed away about 2 months ago, and she died at the ripe age of 49, which is saddening. But I had this moment when I was going through her dream book, and I noticed my mother completed about 85% of the things that she had set on her list of things to do. I mean, she had a book with pictures and actual actions. She had a dream of driving a Lincoln Town Car. She bought one about 4 years ago. She had a dream of going to Hawaii. She went several years ago. She was a teacher, and she wanted to start a scholarship fund. In her death, a scholarship fund was actually created in her name. So I inspired by what she did and how she was able to accomplish so much just by putting it in words and putting it in a picture form. I mean, you hear all the time to create your goals, but just even just reading that, it changed my mind about actually being able to control what it is that I do, because no matter how short or long your life may be, you might actually be able to get everything that you ever thought that you wanted to be accomplished. 85% is not bad.
And a list, as silly as it might seem somehow, but a list, even after you're gone, provides a way to measure how you did. Interesting. Charlotte, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
All right. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Caroline Adams Miller. She's a Life Coach based in Maryland. And thanks very much for coming into the studio. We appreciate your time today.
I just checked another goal off my list by being here.
Now, you've helped people keep track of items on their life list. How do you hold feet to the fire when people start slipping or saying, oh, I'll get around to that next year?
Well, see, this is where coaching, I think, has it over every other profession in terms of helping people accomplish their goals, because I exist to be someone's cheerleader and to be their form of accountability. And I've been doing this for about 10 years. And I'm a little unique in the coaching world, because what I've done is marry the science of positive psychology, and I was in the first graduating class at the University of Pennsylvania last year in this master's program, the Master's of Applied Positive Psychology. I marry that with goal setting theory, and there is a science behind goal setting theory, and that's why certain kinds of goals are better than other kinds of goals, and a trained coach who is trained in these two different types of thinking and action can really help you accomplish your goals in ways that I'm not sure a therapist or a best friend or other kinds of people can do it. So,
Do people come to you with lists and say, how do I achieve this? Or do you suggest to them one of the things you might want to consider?
I would say for the most part, when they come to me, this is a requirement of being in my coaching practice. And I have two different ways people can do it. And your listeners can go to two different sites and see and use these tools today for them. First one is my website, which is just www.carolinemiller.com. You can fill out a template and I will have your goals up tonight on my website. And I will boldface and check off all of your completed goals for the rest of your life. I will host your list forever. And then I have a new interactive site as a result of Alex's wonderful story in the New York Times, that one of my web designers, his name is Chad Legrone, and he created it Sunday after the article, and it is at www.your100things.com. And you can go there and put in your goals, cheer for other people's goals. I was looking today, the site's filling up with everyone putting in their goals, and you can get inspired by other people's goals too. There is a social contagion effect, you see, when you are around a proactive, zestful person. So there are a couple things that are non-negotiable. non-negotiable to me about accomplishing goals. One is you work with someone who's either a coach or someone who is, you know, trained in how to do this. Another is that you write them down at least once. It makes a huge difference, mm-hmm. once or many, many times. Keep them posted in public somehow in an accountable way. And you also have to make the goals intrinsic. It's a very big difference between intrinsic versus extrinsic goals. I once got a list of goals from someone that was own a Porsche or own a Ferrari, own a Lamborghini, on and on and on. Those are called extrinsic goals or show me goals or look at me goals. And those tend to not produce much fulfillment. And so the best goals and the most lasting goals and the ones that bring you the greatest joy are what's called intrinsic goals. And also a part of goal setting theory that most people don't know is that the best goals are called challenging specific goals, which is why life lists are so critical, mm-hmm. because they invite you to challenge yourself. Now, Barbara, the caller from Michigan, it's very interesting when she talked about how some of these goals had divided into areas, and I think she said her financial goal was a piece of what had allowed her to feel good about the rest of her life. I work with Dr. Michael Frisch from Baylor University, who pioneered the quality of life approach, and what he found is that some of our greatest fulfillment comes from separating our goals into 16 areas that matter, like play and creativity and finance and home. And we've divided in your100things.com. The goals can be in those 16 different areas. And making progress towards valued goals does several things. One is it makes you happier. The other thing is it spills over into other parts of your life, so you then have more zest and enthusiasm about accomplishing the other goals in your life. Hmm. But there is a science behind this, which most people do not know. And so finding a coach who's trained in this can change your life.
Hmm. She was in, Alex Williams, your paragraph, Cite the Experts.
Yes, she was. She was expert A number one. Thanks, Caroline.
Thanks, Alex. Your article has changed a lot of people's lives already.
Yeah, it's everybody around the office is talking about making one now.
Ah, well, let's see if we get some listeners back on the line. This is Dan. Dan's with us from Green Bay in Wisconsin.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, I've checked off one of my things just being on the show.
Nice to help you.
Well, the interesting thing is when I was 18, I had a course in college, and one of the things we had to do was a 100 things we wanted to do before we died. I'm 47 now, and my parents came across that list about 10 years ago, and it's hilarious to see what I thought was important then and compare it to what I think is important now.
Well, let me ask you first, Dan, did you ever play tailback for the Green Bay Packers?
Yes, I did. In fact, they won in 97, so I got to check that one off.
What were some of the differences as you look back at that list from your callow youth?
Well, you know, some of it my mom edited for me. She actually crossed it out with a black marker. I'll let you think what that might have been. But it was awfully self-centered items. And you know, the things that were more about me. And the difference between that me and now is that I'm much more interested in my community and my friends and my family.
Very interesting, Dan. Thanks very much for the call. I would think, Caroline Adams Miller, that our goals do change over, 30
well,
years or so.
Hopefully we become more mature and wise about what brings us joy, and that's one of the things Marty Seligman really teaches at the University of Pennsylvania and in his work, and he wrote the book Authentic Happiness, is, you know, there are three paths to lasting happiness, and their engagement, purpose, and meaning. And you really do need to have a sense of engagement and purpose in order to feel happy about your life. And so what he was just saying about the goals of your callow youth, those tend to be more extrinsic in nature. However, he reminded me of a great story I use when I speak and teach at various universities about this. There's a woman named Krista DeLakis. She's a local athlete. When she was in high school, she wrote a list of things to do before she died, and someone had come and spoken at her high school. Number one was to play in the Olympics. 8 years later, her mother found her crumpled up list in her desk, and she had just been chosen to play on the first ever women's field hockey team for Greece. She had been grandfathered in because she had a Greek relative, and her mother called the Washington Post, and they did a wonderful feature on the importance of having dreams. And what I believe happens is our reticular activating system is set into motion just by the process of writing these goals down, even in email or just once on a piece of paper, and you begin to screen out spam. The things that don't pertain to accomplishing your goal tend to go by the wayside. People who don't have a list don't have a roadmap for life. And so when clients come to me and want to work with me, and I have all of them at least start a list like this, just put five down, for example. quite often I get female clients who start to cry because they've stopped dreaming. Somewhere in their early adulthood, it became about their husbands or their children, and they stopped believing things were possible. And it's very magical to be a coach and to have people watch their dreams happen.
We're talking about life lists with Alex Williams, a reporter for the New York Times who wrote about it in last Sunday's editions of the paper, and with Caroline Adams Miller, a life coach who's based in suburban Maryland near Washington, D.C. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Connie on the line. Connie's calling us from St. Louis.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. I'm wondering if your guest could speak to the idea that sometimes even when you write them down, things happen when you least expect them, and maybe you might not get what you ask for, but you get what you need.
Mm-hmm. Your priorities can change in a hurry, in other words.
Well, just the idea that you have a general intention, and then it moves itself in its own direction, and it's not necessarily the direction you intended it to go, but it's really interesting and it's fulfilling.
I wonder, Alex Williams, did you talk to any people in the course of researching your piece with experiences like what Connie's talking about?
You know, I didn't happen to talk to any people about that, but I've been talking to friends about that in the last couple of days since the piece came out, and I think that that's an interesting and valid phenomenon. I think a lot of people do set off to write a novel, but along the way, maybe they instead start a blog that becomes a website that becomes a company, and that's equally satisfying, but it's not what they set out to do.
Hmm.
So the intention is powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that intention, I think, Caroline Adams-Miller, you would
say?
Well,
this is a great question because it brings up the point, what does that goal mean to you? And I always ask clients, if that is your goal, what is the value you're attaching to it? And what does it mean to you? Because quite often there are different ways to scratch the itch. So, for example, if someone says, I want to be on Broadway, and a trained coach works with them and finds out, well, what would it mean to you to be in Broadway? Well, I just love to sing and I love to hear applause. Well, that could also mean doing it in a neighborhood theatrical program.
Oh, or even in the subway.
Or even in the subway. So it's really about what's behind it. What's the fulfillment? So it is a funny way how things begin to get set in motion, how they get accomplished. But it's really, what's the intrinsic value of that goal to you? And there are many ways you can actually see that goal manifest.
All right. Connie, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And let's see if we can get Bob on the line. And Bob's with us from Overland in Ohio.
Yeah, hi. I think that I'll probably stick with the advice that came from the John Lennon song, the line where he said, life is what happens to you while you're making other plans. And I've got to say that the whole discussion kind of strikes me as a little pathetic and sad. Thanks.
Pathetic and sad. I guess Bob didn't want to stay around to defend that. But did you, Alex Williams, as an outsider to this, detect that aspect to it?
No, not really, actually. I'm not sure what's pathetic and sad. I mean, I think it's true that, often, life is made up of these strange little serendipitous moments that you can't predict. But the point for most people that I talk to seem to be pointing yourself down a positive road, and then what happens, happens.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I don't know if John exactly meant it that way, but we have to go back to the song.
Well, let's interpret the works of Lennon in some other program. But finally, I wanted to ask you, Caroline Miller was talking about, you know, the extrinsic and intrinsic. Are these personal, should these, in terms of definitional, the people you talk to, should these be personal goals, something I can do or something, you know, not many of us could eliminate AIDS in Africa or something like that?
Well, an individual could eliminate AIDS in Africa with the help of other people, but the goals do need to be personal because you can't control the actions of other people. So it has to be about the path you set yourself on and the positive progress you make in those directions. But I have to say, this last caller raises an interesting point, and there is a backlash to this whole goal-setting movement, and that is this whole Zen idea of just let life unfold. However, what people overlook is that is a goal. That is a goal, actually, to be non-reactive. I find the most positive, proactive people, and this has been studied in hundreds and hundreds of studies, they have challenging, specific goals, and they are making daily, monthly, yearly progress towards those goals. And the people who do not have a list like this tend to be reactive, and they wake up and they do whatever is in front of them, and they tend to not reach their potential in life. And that is a fact, and that has been studied.
Great. Stay with us. We'll take a couple more calls about life lists, their meaning and value, if any. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. We'll also talk about safety on college campuses, a big issue after the shootings at Virginia Tech in April. But is the focus on security overblown? James Allen Fox will join us. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're talking about life lists with Alex Williams, a reporter for the New York Times, who wrote an article on people that write and follow life lists. It appeared in Sunday's editions of the newspaper. Also with us is Caroline Adams Miller, a life coach who's based in suburban Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Dustin. Dustin with us from Casper in Wyoming.
Thank you for taking my call, Neil. Appreciate the show.
Sure.
I just had a quick comment on this, actually. As a Gen Xer who's now in my early 30s, I had a list. I was a very cynical youth, and my friends and I all sat down and decided that this is how we were going to control our lives. And I was thoroughly convinced I would, A, have your job, and B, die with an Academy Award in one hand, a Grammy in the other, and my gold medal for the Olympic luge around my neck, which were, of course, very, you know, self-centered and selfish goals. And then the one thing I never planned on happened, and I fell in love.
Huh.
And I have no regrets the saying that, you know, the goals I set for myself are never achieved or never going to be achieved, which I'm fairly sure they're not. But it definitely puts a priority on it. So you talk about dreaming like a child again. I think it is better to put some maturity behind it when you make these lists and to dream like a child rather than to make the list when you are still practically a child.
I wonder, Caroline Miller, make a list but at least be open to the possibility of revision?
Well, Laura King is a researcher who's done wonderful work on what happens when mothers, for example, give birth to Down syndrome children and what happens to all their dreams about a certain kind of motherhood or raising a certain kind of child. And really the happiest and most resilient people have a way of disengaging from unworkable goals and instead creating a new set of goals that are more realistic given their situation. But the point here is that it's not a bad idea to make life lists necessarily at a young age, but it's important to do it with someone who is trained in the process of goal setting. A goal is not a goal is not a goal. I'd really like people to understand that. Working with a trained coach, for example, is one of the best ways to find out, is your list nuts or is your list realistic? And then how realistic is it to go after certain goals? I started working with a woman in her late 20s last fall who was in the financial services industry in New York City. And one of the first things she said to me in our first call was, I really want to go to medical school, but everyone tells me it's crazy, including my therapist, who said, is this another one of your big ideas? And I sat down with her and worked out how practical it was, the steps, you know, what she would have to do. And she's starting Harvard Medical School now, right now. And this is less than a year. Could she have done that with the help of a therapist best friend? Maybe not. But with a trained coach, these goals can be broken down and very realistic. So, you know, I think it's one thing to say when you're 16 you can write, you know, own a Porsche, do this, do that. But it's another thing to work with someone who's trained in helping you see the differences between different kinds of goals and then make it realistic and applicable to your life.
Mm. And Alex Williams, I assume in your talking to people about life lists, you came across people who were dead serious about goals, like going to Harvard Medical School, but also there were some frivolous items on their list too, I suspect.
Oh, there definitely were. I mean, if you look at the website 43 Things, which is a social networking site, which is where literally 1.2 million people have posted their own lists of 43 things to do before they die. You look at number 12, it's kiss in the rain. You know, also, you know, number 25, write a novel. Number 28, run in a marathon. And there's definitely a mix of the whimsical and the serious.
About mile 20, running a marathon is not so frivolous. But anyway, Dustin, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. And I'd like to thank our guest, Alex Williams. You just heard of the New York Times. He joined us from our bureau in New York. Thanks very much. We hope you get some time to work on your life list, Alex.
I'll get to work right now. Thanks
a lot. And here with us in Studio 3A in Washington, Caroline Adams Miller, a life coach in Bethesda, Maryland. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back, campus security.